Hi, welcome to the very first episode of the Brilliant Resilient Club, the podcast all about people who push past their physical comfort zone to gain mental resilience. I'm your host, Bhavani Vaddy, and I just want to be clear, this podcast is not just about sporting overachievers, because believe you me, I'm not one of them. In fact, I've hated exercise all my life, probably because I was scarred by PE lessons. I could never make it over the lowest bar in high jump, was the one way at the back in cross country, and had such bad nightmares about school swimming lessons that I would regularly sit them out. But I was grounded from my job as a TV reporter during the pandemic because of an autoimmune condition, and I took up cold water swimming. This made me want to explore why and how other people take to the physical to cope.
I thought to myself, I've got to this age without swimming, and I stayed away from it most of my life. Then obviously the stereotypes, the stigmas of having heavy bones and all that kind of thing. It was easier. It's easier to say, you know, blacks don't swim, you know. So when it comes to stereotypes, I wasn't hiding behind some of them. I was hiding behind all of them. It healed me back, but I was determined to do it.
My first guest is a remarkable individual, Ed Akura, who's not only overcome his fear of water to learn to swim as an adult, but is also now working to break down the barriers to swimming faced by many black and minority ethnic people. He's challenging the myths and stereotypes that held him back in the first place. Ed documented his journey in his first film, Blacks Can't Swim, and he's recently released a sequel. Welcome to the Brilliant Resilient Club, Ed. How's the swimming going?
I'm still learning. I've actually just come back from my swimming lesson, actually. This is probably my fifth swimming lesson since lockdown lifted. I'm still enjoying it. I'm not where I want to be yet.
Before we chat a bit more about your swimming journey, I'd like to find out, what do you think it is to be resilient?
It's hard to say, because various different people have various different things that hold them back. When I started learning how to swim, you appreciate the first time I ever went into water to learn how to swim was in the end of a film called Blacks Can't Swim. I personally didn't think I could do it. I thought to myself, I've got to this age without swimming. It looks hard, it's difficult. I couldn't touch the ground. In anywhere where I can't touch the ground, I get scared, you know. Then obviously the stereotypes, the stigmas of having heavy bones and all that kind of thing, it healed me back. But I was determined to do it. And I think that you could say that's some level of resilience. I didn't have any choice but to do it.
Determination.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely determination. Everything in life, it's not only what you call swimming, anything in life that is difficult, that you're not used to doing, it's easier to stay away. And I stayed away for most of my life. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are doing this exactly the same thing.
Now, as you mentioned, you documented your journey from a lifetime of avoiding water to learning to swim at 53 in your film, Blacks Can't Swim. Make a film called Black Can't Swim. Soundtrack in the new jack swing. Cast a lead in a floating ring. Is it a cultural or physical thing? What prompted you to overcome your fears?
My daughter. My daughter is now 10 years old. She learned to swim at the age of 3. Credit to my wife. Probably if it was down to me, she probably still would not be swimming right now. And the irony is that I was the one that was taking her to swimming lessons on Saturday morning and watching from afar. That was the main reason. Because I always said to myself, if I was ever in a situation whereby she fell in the water and I couldn't help her, I don't think I'll ever be able to forgive myself. Now I know that when somebody falls into water, you don't just jump in there and try and help them, first call for the emergency services and all that. But at least if I could get into the water and give her a chance of holding on to me until the emergency services come or someone comes to give help, then that's something. And if I can't swim, then I can't do that. So,
what are some of the myths, stereotypes and prejudices preventing black people learning to swim?
The myths, heavy bones. I hear that all the time. And shall I tell you that I've heard that from secondhand, I've heard that from swimming instructors. I have friends, I know people who have been told by swimming instructors, maybe the reason why you're struggling is because of your bone density and that kind of thing. That is one of the biggest issues that we are facing, you know. And it's not factual. And that's the reason why we are, as the Black Swimming Association, we're working with RNLI on some research that will dispel this myth. You know, because it has to go. Those myths has to go. That's one of the reasons. With ladies, with women, it's the hair. The hair is a big issue. When it comes to black females and males, the hair is the identity, especially females, the hair is the identity. You know, I've got a sister, I've got a mother, I've got lots of cousins, so I know about the hair things.
And yeah, quite a few people in your films raise this as a real problem. Let's hear from some of them.
Is me swimming in the pool for an hour worth the stress I have to go through? And it's understandable. I get it. It's like, if my hair is wet and I don't have great texture hair, how am I now supposed to walk out of this building comfortably with my head high, but I walked in there quite confident?
My mum, she'd always tell me, don't get your hair wet when you go swimming. But I feel like it was inevitable, literally. I would try everything, every swimming cap, my hair would still get wet. I feel like it was a process of the chlorine and like natural hair.
It was interesting because from the changing room, I think things are different. You know, when you're black and you're in a situation with mostly white people, you already know all the ways that you're different. You know, you already know the ways that things aren't the same. And it's like even being in the changing rooms and not having lotion, you know, coming out with your skin dry or getting your hair wet and not wanting your hair to get wet. And we'd always have fun after the swimming lesson. And, you know, we were allowed to play however we wanted. And my friends would try and splash me, I'd be like, don't get water on my hair. And they could never really understand that.
And this sounds like a real everyday barrier because Afro hair needs a lot of maintenance. And that's even before going into chlorinated water, which could lead to more damage.
Yeah, you get it. So it's a big issue. It's a big, big, big issue.
You think it can be overcome?
With a lot of determination. Yeah. So yeah, it's all down to priorities. If you see it as a priority, then you overcome it. You see, and I think that's why we need to, you know, keep on talking about it. Because the more we talk about it, the more we're going to uncover the benefits and the reasons why we should swim, and those outweigh the disadvantages.
But there are other obstacles, aren't there? Just recently, the International Swimming Federation, which regulates aquatic events at the Olympics, ruled that swimming caps designed for natural black hair wouldn't be allowed at the Games. What message do you think that sends out?
So I've had so many questions, so many conversations about this topic, and especially being the co-founder of the Black Swimming Association is very, very relevant to what we do. From an elite point of view, it doesn't really make it much difference. If you're an elite swimmer, throughout your journey, you have done what you need to do to get to where you are. So your hair and how you and your what swim caps you wear would be in place. You know, so and the irony is that there's not many elite black swimmers out there that will probably be needing this. But the problem is that this sends out a message to the grassroots. So the younger generation, those we are trying to get into the sports, those that we are trying to get into swimming, this sends out the message to them that if you want to become an elite swimmer, then you have to sacrifice your hair. And if we keep on, or shall I say, if the swim sector keeps on sending out these messages, we end up in the situation that we have right now, whereby in England, Alice Dearing is the only black swimmer in Team G. So that's the issue that we have. It's the message that it's sending out to the community.
It just highlights how relevant the issues are that you raise, because yeah, it's an ongoing situation.
And it's like, many times I've spoken to females from the African and Caribbean and Asian community, and they say, I want to go swimming, my swimsuit doesn't fit. It doesn't fit right. The shape doesn't right. We have different shapes, you know, and it doesn't sit right. So I don't feel comfortable in it. So it's time, right? And there's a lot of organizations out there creating products for our communities. So it's time the Federation, so the Swimming Federation, take note of this. And yeah, because if we want to get to that stage, we need to be comfortable in what we're wearing.
And actually, modesty is an issue for some communities. Yeah. So modest swimwear would be great if that became the norm. So the sport, the activity can be accessible to everyone.
But time has moved on. Diversity and inclusion and participation is very, very key, very important. So we've got to look at the world as a whole, you know.
Now back to your swim story. Some of these myths and stereotypes we've discussed, were you hiding behind some of them? Did they hold you back?
No, I wasn't hiding behind some of them. I was hiding behind all of them. and those that were not there, I probably created some of my own as well. Yeah, it's easier to say, you know, black don't swim. You know, I can remember once I was at a barbecue and at my house, and then we were chatting, and then some of my friends, and I think there was about 8-9 of us at that point, just by there, and about, I think, 5 of us were black, and all the black guys couldn't swim. And it just happened that all of us couldn't swim. And when I said, can you swim? The main thing they said, well, of course I can't swim. I'm black. We don't swim. And so it became, and this was even long before I even thought about making the film. So yeah, so when it comes to stereotypes, we just hide behind it. And you just hear, you know, when you hear the figures, 95% of black adults and 80% of black children in England do not swim, you can see where I'm coming from. It's something that has to change. It's the stereotypes, the stigmas, the myths has to go. Yeah, has to go.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned those figures from Swim England, because they also found that only 2% of regular swimmers in England are black. And in your sequel, you explore why through the experiences of young people. Let's hear from some of them.
We know we can't swim. And this is experience from, we're talking primary school, to all the way to even now. I'm ashamed to say, but even now, I still can't get it. I guess it's the fear in water that I have. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's what's weird. It's not like we've never had lessons, because like it was compulsory in primary school.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know if we don't pick it up or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to be able to go on these holidays and just be, you know, kicking about in the water doing or whatever.
From the beginning was primary school. We used to have swimming lessons. That's where it first started off. But when we were doing the lessons, I was the one that couldn't swim in it. But it was like a few of us, but like, you know, we were all black.
So what were their reasons for not getting in the pool?
The same reasons that you hear over and over again. It wasn't a priority with my family, so we never did it. I never learned to swim at school. I left school not knowing how to swim, because 1 in 4 children leave primary school not knowing how to swim.
Now, I really relate to a lot of the themes in your films. I had nightmares as a child before school swimming lessons. I hated being underwater. And a lot of my friends could already swim when we were at primary school, so I was already behind. And it was just embarrassing, you know, to try and catch up. So I often just skip the lessons, so that's why I'm learning to swim properly now as an adult, like you are. So how are you now trying to get more black and ethnic minority people into the pool?
Okay, we did that by setting up the organisation, the Black Swimming Association, with Alice Deering, Daniel Obey and Seren Jones. And we set it up as an organisation, set out to highlight the importance of water safety in the African, Asia and Caribbean communities. Because basically, we have never had any organization represent us in the swimming community, in the swimming sector. You know, all the organizations such as, you know, Swim England, the Royal Life Saving Society, RNLI, they've all worked, but they have not been able to communicate with the black community. You know, they struggle to get through to the community. Mainly because they don't understand the way we, you know, you've got to understand the community in order to be able to get through to the community. So we set ourselves up as an organization to bridge that gap between the community and the swim sector. And that's what we're doing. And you mentioned about school swimming. And I sat in a meeting with one of the governing bodies, and what was said was, oh, but swimming is on the curriculum. So why are they failing? And I went and did some research, and basically the curriculum, school swimming is on the school curriculum, and there's 3 main criteria. By the time you finish year 6 primary school, you should be able to swim 25 meters, you should be able to perform 2 different kinds of strokes, and you should be able to perform a water safety test.
Yeah.
On average, 70% of children are able to do this by the time they finish primary school. But when you go into the Black Nation and African minority areas and communities, it goes down from 70% to 42%. So then you ask yourself, why? But if you look at it, each child, I think, has only 25 hours beginning from year 1 to year 6, right? And let's say you have an hour lesson. Most schools don't have pools. So the teacher will have to take the 30 children to the leisure center to go and learn how to swim. And if you know anything about kids, they will get there, they will mess around, they will do the usual thing. So basically, you only have about 20, 30 minutes. 30 kids, 20 minutes to teach them how to swim. So what the school teachers will do, what the swimming instructors will do, is they will look at those that have some level of swimming and put them in a pool. And those that don't have any level, any count, you know, they'll just put them to the side, blow bubbles, put a ring around them. And so they never actually learn, you know, they will never learn to do anything.
Yeah, I think that was me.
And you tend to find that those that know how to get, you know, do some level of swimming are those that parents took them out swimming outside of the education system. So, you know, so if your parents are like my parents that didn't take me swimming lessons, then I have no chance.
Yeah, culturally for my family, it wasn't a priority to have swimming lessons outside school. They arrived in this country. And yeah, it seems we seem to have a bit of a parallel immigrant experience. Yeah. They arrived, they were working hard to try and make a life for us. And education was very, very important. But perhaps extracurricular stuff like swimming lessons just wasn't on their radar. So yeah, similar stories to those in your films. So yeah, I can absolutely relate. But you did overcome that. So what stage are you with learning to swim?
It's going well. It's going well. Like I said, I just came back from my swimming lesson. I was having a problem with breathing. You know, putting my head in the water, I can put my hand, get underwater, I can go, I can do my thing, you know, that kind of thing. But as soon as I come out to breathe, it's like, then all goes to pot. But I'm getting there now. Uh-huh. Yeah. And someone asked me, do you actually enjoy it now? Are you enjoying it? And I answered, it's like when you first learn how to drive, you are concentrating. Then once you're comfortable with your surroundings and you're familiar with it, then you can relax a bit more and all that kind of thing. And I think I'm just going beyond that stage right now. So I'm beginning to become, my instructor said, you're actually beginning to relate to the water. Uh-huh. So basically, I'm beginning to do things and I know why I'm doing it and I can feel it and I can react to it and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm getting there.
So you would say you're enjoying it now?
Yeah. And also, he's giving me a wetsuit. So when I get into the water, I'm not cold. I go, Mark, what's the temperature like? Shall I bring a kettle with me? Getting into the water, like, but now I've got wetsuits, so like, I'm in there, you know, yeah.
Well, I swim at my local Lido, so I love getting into the cold water.
Why? Cool water. If I could swim in a bath, nice hot water, I would do it. I'm a tropical baby, yeah.
Well, so am I, but...
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. There's something about the cold water. It's a buzz or something. It seems to work for me.
So any time I get a message, what do you call it, from the swim schools up and I'll say, oh, Ed, you should come with cold water swimming with us and all that kind of thing. Anytime I get those invites, I'm going to point them over to you. I say, yeah, she would love it.
Yeah, but I can barely sit, so I'm not quite sure what value there'll be in that. But do you think a lack of role models plays a part? Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned Alice Deering, and she'll be Britain's first black female swimmer at the Olympics.
That's amazing. Amazing, yeah. Yeah, it's very, very important. Very, very important. My daughter's 10 years old. My daughter's from mixed heritage. She's my wife's Indian. And when the first time my daughter met Alice, she was so excited. She goes, wow, she's a swimmer. She's like, she looks like me, she's a swimmer. So basically, yeah, it's very, very important. You know, the more you see people looking like you, doing something, it gives you the hope that you can do it as well. It's very, very important. Role models, very, very important.
Well, let's hope she brings back a medal from Tokyo.
I know. No pressure, Alice. But even if she doesn't, she's done something a lot of people have not been able to do, and she's made a mark, you know, and we're having a conversation now about it. So
I find what you're doing really inspiring, not only because you're overcoming your own fears, you're doing it in a really public way and trying to help others overcome their anxieties at the same time.
That's right, yeah, because there's a lot of people out there that, like I say, when I first decided to bring a film called Last Chance Swim out, it was just about my journey, you know, it was just about my personal journey in swimming. It's not until the film was released that I realized that, hold on, this story is not just about me. There's a lot of people out there that share the same fears and anxieties. And, you know, so the whole agenda is to encourage as many people to get into the water. You know, confront our fears, address the stereotypes, and dispel the myths, you know. So, yeah, so it's, yeah, I'm just wrong. I will not stop talking about it until the job is done.
I say you've really pushed yourself past your comfort zone. How do you think that's helped you be resilient, perhaps, in other parts of your life?
I'm a kind of determined person anyway. And if I really want to do something, I will do it. And but what I'm doing right now, it's made me realize that there's, you know, if there's something that's important, you I not only have to talk about it, do it. You have to talk about it as well. And that's why, in any given opportunity, I'm out there talking about my swim journey and about the issue with Blacks and the disproportionate amount of Black people not swimming and such. Yeah, so it's maybe resilient in everything I do, you know, and I hope, more importantly, I hope it makes my daughter understand the importance of resilience. So she sees what I'm doing and she can apply it with various other things in her life. So that's mainly one of the things, the reason why I'm happy I'm doing what I'm doing. I was up at four o'clock this morning, heading down to London Bridge to meet my instructor for a swim, then come back to work. But yeah.
4 o'clock in the morning, that's crazy.
4 o'clock in the morning, I was up, yeah. I left home at five, drove to the station, drove to Norfolk Station, caught the Central Line, all the way to London Bridge. Yeah, it's an hour and a half journey each way, just to, you know, to learn how to swim.
This is worse than cold water swimming. I'd rather get in a cold pool than get up that early.
this shows my determination, and I started with Mark, so I want to continue, and you know we've got some targets to hit.
Do you have that sense that I'm doing something difficult, so I can handle other hard things in my life?
Oh yeah, not cold water swimming, but yeah. Anything about that.
Ed, it's been so much fun talking to you, so energizing and motivating. Really good luck with your swimming lessons going forward and your work with the Black Swimming Association. Thanks for joining me on the first ever episode of the Brilliant Resilient Club podcast.
Thank you.
You can watch Ed's films Blacks Can't Swim and the sequel on all major streaming platforms. And if you like this episode, please do rate, review or subscribe. It makes all the difference to help others discover the show. Join me next week for a new episode of the Brilliant Resilient Club. Bye for now.